Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Welcome back to another fun-filled episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here running the ship. We got Randy and Justin here. How's it going, boys?
Fabulous. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks for asking. How are you doing, David?
I am doing great, but you just fresh off a flight from New York Comic Con. Why don't you share a little bit about your fun experience there?
You know, that's absolutely 100% true. I literally, within the last hour, just stepped into my house, just got off the plane this afternoon, and back from my very first ever New York Comic Con. And, you know, I was expecting it to be like every other convention we've ever been to. And we've been to, you know, a fair amount, mostly on the West Coast. But this group of people is a little different. In a good way, in a totally good way. But, oh man, it was a lot of fun. So the very first day of the convention, Thursday, you have to imagine it's going to look a little bit like San Diego on maybe preview night or on Thursday, the first day or so of the convention, relatively empty, right? Absolutely wrong, because within an hour of the exhibition floor being open, it was packed shoulder to shoulder. And I kid you not, that day on Thursday at New York felt like a Saturday at San Diego in terms of just trying to navigate through the exhibition hall.
Now, and is it just not as is it not as spaced out as San Diego, or is it just more people?
Here's the thing. I think the way it's spaced out is about the same. There's about the same amount of room from one aisle to the next, but ultimately the room itself in the convention center is smaller. It's like, you know, if you were to try to see the entire exhibition floor of San Diego, there are long rows that you walk up and you walk down, you walk up and you walk down from one side to the other. Well, this one, the rows aren't as long. It might be a little bit further wide. There might be more rows to explore, but the rows are about like half the length that they are inside the San Diego Convention Center. So I'm thinking that ultimately, in terms of square footage, I think it might be a little bit smaller. I didn't do my research to actually back that up. But it just, to me, that's what it feels like. It feels a little smaller. But here's the thing, too. Going to an East Coast convention like that, it's 100% different vendors. There's maybe one or two people that I recognize from San Diego, but almost all the vendors that are there, they're all East Coast vendors. So it's all new stuff I haven't seen before.
Oh, that's cool.
So if anything, it made me like rubberneck even more than normal. I stopped at each booth, at each vendor booth, and I was looking at their stuff because they're all new people. Like they have a huge like publishing presence there. The independent press or whatever. Mm-hmm. The small press, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
My brain is melted.
Yeah, there's like small press pavilion, and then there's like an artist alley. Those are the two indie main focus.
Right. The small press area is way bigger than it is at San Diego. Way more people pushing their own wares that are not major labels, which is cool.
Your wares someplace else.
and speaking of Artist Alley, this is one of the things that I liked most about New York Comic Con. Their Artist Alley is in a completely different room in the building. It's in another exhibition hall, maybe about half the size of the main hall, but that is super spaced out. Tons and tons of artists. The way it's spaced out, it looks like there's probably maybe twice the amount of artists that there are at San Diego. And they all have room to display their stuff nicely. And that room was packed too. It wasn't shoulder to shoulder because the walkways were much wider. But I think it really... I think it showcased the artists and the stuff that they have for sale there better than it does at San Diego because it's not quite so cramped. And I like the idea that it's a completely separate room dedicated to them. So it's like And it's actually like a point of interest, a destination for people to go. Like, oh, I want to go to Artist Alley and see so and so. So it was like a big deal. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm gonna go hang out in Artist Alley because that's the only place I can like catch a breath at San Diego because nobody's hanging out over there. Right. You know, this felt like a living, breathing part of the con, whereas it's almost an afterthought at San Diego. And I know people are probably gonna flame me for saying that, but that's just kind of how I feel it is. If you know what side of the convention center to go to. If you just want to lean against the wall and get a drink or something like that, just kind of detox, you always hang out in Artist Alley.
Well, I read an article on Wall Street Journal, just to interrupt you for 1 second, that it said that it was going to have larger aisles, or wider aisles and larger venues, and because that was to accommodate approximately 15,000 more people, and they already had 151,000, which is more than San Diego Comic-Con has ever had.
I was just going to ask you how many people were, if you had heard any numbers, because I didn't hear any numbers while I was there.
So far, 151 was last year. Was last year plus an approximate 15,000 more this year.
So take San Diego the last couple of years, which they say has been, what, 140?
Yeah, it was 135, then 140 something, yeah.
Yeah, and then add another 25,000 people to that. Holy crap. And you know, the thing with San Diego, all the local events in the Gas Lamp or what have you, they're right across the street from the convention center. They're all centrally located right there. So maybe those 140,000 people, maybe 120 or 130,000 of them are in the convention center or one of the halls or waiting in a line or something. The other 10,000 is doing stuff out around the Gas Lamp area. Here, if you wanted to do anything outside of the convention center, for example, like any of the many New York Super Week activities that were going on, you had to walk quite a ways to get there. It wasn't just a convenient, I'm going to cross the street and boom, I'm there. Mm-hmm. And everywhere you look is a sea of people. You had to have a destination in mind. You had to know where to go, or you had to jump on a subway to get from the convention center up to Times Square to where something was going on over there for Super Week. So it was way more spaced out. That was kind of weird. I found that to be kind of inconvenient, but getting around in New York for me as a California guy, I found a whole different, relatively inconvenient experience too, until you got used to it. But I will say this too, something that is a little bit different with the way that they have it set up at New York is there's food vendors all over the place inside the exhibition hall, which is good because they only had two food trucks parked out front to be able to feed people who wanted to go outside and eat. So you either had to wait in line inside for like 20 or 30 minutes to get food, or wait in line for 45 minutes to an hour outside at a food truck to get lunch. So the food situation there was not necessarily, even though they had a lot of vendors indoors, it didn't seem as plentiful as it was over in San Diego. You don't have as many options. And all the people that are inside the in the convention center itself, they're all the same street vendors with like a hot dog cart or like nuts or falafel or whatever. It's all the same shit, like Philly cheesesteaks. They just wheeled their cart inside the convention center. It's crazy. It's weird. It was the weirdest thing I've seen. But yeah.
Well, what about like free events? Because we were talking about attendance. San Diego estimates that they have like between like 30 and 40,000 people that come just for the free events at Comic-Con because there's so much to do with like Nerd HQ and stuff like that. Was there that kind of presence at New York too?
Yes and no. There is that kind of presence, and it's the thing I was describing earlier, New York Super Week. It starts the Monday before the convention actually begins, and it runs all the way through Sunday, through the last day of New York Comic Con. And that's where you'll find all of those off-site events. Like when we screened Nonstop to Comic Con out there, it was through New York Super Week. So it wasn't screened at the convention center. It was screened a 15-minute walk away, a few blocks down the road. At this little eatery with like a club room kind of thing, a little private screening area. So there's all of that kind of stuff going on. But to the best of my knowledge, none of it's free, or at least none of the stuff that I did was free. You had to pay anywhere between $5 or $10 to go to each little event. One of the events that I did was a Star Wars trivia contest, which was held in Times Square at the Discovery. It's like basically a museum, and they're just in the process of switching over their exhibition from all Hunger Games props and costumes to Star Wars props and costumes.
Did you win?
I came in third place in the trivia competition.
Wow, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I got 48 out of like 53 questions right.
Man, yeah. Good for you, man.
So, and it was all original trilogy, and I didn't even study or bone up on it. If I had, I may have done better, but I just went right off the cuff. And it was a lot of fun. It was a neat thing. And while I was in Times Square, it was actually that same night, I walked across the street to what is, I guess, the world's largest Toys R Us. I don't know if you guys have ever been there. It's like this 3 or 4 story behemoth.
And yeah, it's nuts.
It's crazy. And it's the only place that I've been that has plentiful The Force Awakens merchandise. Like, I could look at the wall and pick up almost any figure that was released from the first wave that was supposed to be there for Force Friday that has been completely bare in every single California store that I've been to, whether it's a Target or a Toys R Us, what have you. All of them were there. But, of course, I wasn't going to buy a bunch of toys to throw in my suitcase to bring back home. But I was surprised that they actually had merchandise, and I wonder if it's because that's their flagship store, so they want to keep it well stocked. But that's the only place I've seen well stocked for the new Star Wars stuff. But it was beautiful. It was great. They had like their Lego. They have like a practically an entire floor devoted to Legos, and it is more sets than I have ever seen ever put together in one room. It was amazing. They have like these gigantic buildings, like a New York City skyscape kind of thing, built out of Legos. They had a giant animatronic T-Rex and a replica of the gate from Jurassic Park. And they don't even have much in the way of Jurassic Park toys just because they didn't make a whole lot, but they still had this giant thing in Toys R Us. It was amazing. And it was really cool. I was super impressed with their Toys R Us. I mean, but overall, I mean, just New York in general, I was expecting not to like it because I grew up a suburban guy and I really don't like urban environments. I don't like cities in general just because they feel dirty to me. They just feel dirty and unsafe. And that's because, you know, whether it's LA, which is right down the street from me, or when I went up to San Francisco, I just felt uncomfortable because it just, you know, I fucking saw a dead body while I was in San Francisco. That kind of scarred me a little bit. So I don't like cities. But I actually found myself thoroughly enjoying the entire atmosphere in New York. And I never really felt like a scared little white boy scared to be out of suburbia, you know? I actually enjoyed it. I kind of felt like, you know, it's not as scary as movies and TV make it sound. I hope that doesn't sound terrible to say that, but I mean, you have to admit, a big urban city like that kind of gets a bad rap, so you kind of go into it looking over your shoulder, but it wasn't that bad at all.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to New York, like, I was shocked at how nice everybody was to me. I wore my Giants hat, you know, I'm not wearing a Yankees or a Mets cap, and like, people would like stop me on the street and ask me if I like saw the game and they want to talk baseball with me, just like random strangers. And that same trip, we ended up going to like Boston and we went to Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And like, aside from Boston being like the worst place in the universe, New York was like full of like the nicest people. I mean, I also really enjoy San Francisco, but I've never seen a dead body there. But I like the environment of San Francisco and the environment of New York because they're totally different, but they're a lot of fun because I'm also a suburban kid. L.A. is fine, but it's just, I don't know.
Did you go to any panels, Randy? Did you go to like the Firefly reunion or anything like that?
No. I mean, imagine the lineup for panels at San Diego, and it was just as bad here. And I heard that some of the bigger panels weren't even in the largest room, which had a lot of people up in arms, because they filled up super quick that way. And some of the stuff that was happening in the main hall didn't fill at all because they weren't as popular as some of the other things happening in smaller rooms. It was crazy. But no, I really just, walked the floor. I ultimately ended up going 2 days and then, I let my wife use my pass for one of the other days so she can go explore it too. Cause we couldn't manage to get her a ticket on any of the same days that I had a ticket as well. So except for Thursday.
But when she was there, were you just, trolling for hookers and things like that?
I literally did not leave the room.
Oh my god!
That entire day, I slept because you know, going, and it's only a 3-hour time difference, but I keep weird late night hours as it is. And then when I have to go to get up early, when it's already 3 hours, you know, different than I'm used to, granted it was later. So theoretically it should have worked out. I was still just blitzed from jumping through so many different,
geek hoops.
Geek hoops, yeah, we can call it that.
Sure.
I was going to say time zones, but...
There you go. You're in one of the most inspirational cities in the world, and you just park it in your room without a hooker. Shame on you.
But on the bright side, though, I did get some work done. I wasn't just laying around doing nothing. I was getting some work done for the movie.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, which, by the way, I'll go ahead and throw out right now. You may have heard us mention Frack Fest in Oklahoma City, which was a cool little underground film festival. We ended up winning Best Frackin' Feature. And I found out while we were in New York, so I didn't have a chance to talk about it on last week's podcast because I wasn't with you guys. So that is super duper awesome. And then also while we were in New York, we learned that we had been accepted into the LA Comedy Fest. And that's kind of a big deal. And we have a screening coming up in 2 weeks for that. And it's going to be our absolutely first LA screening that isn't inside of a Comic-Con. So that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So more good stuff happening there. But one other observation before we can move on from New York, or if you guys have any other questions, you're welcome to shoot. But one other big observation I wanted to make was the cosplay game at New York is completely different than it is here in California. People go fucking all out, and you've seen this. I mean, probably a lot of our listeners have been to San Diego. They know that, like, pretty much almost 50% of the people that go engage in cosplay to some degree. Here, it was like maybe 10%. There aren't nearly as many cosplayers, and I have to wonder if it's because there aren't very many hotels walking distance from the convention center. There's a lot of walking, taking a subway, doing whatever to get there. I have to wonder if it's because people don't want to cosplay through the mean streets of NYC. So there were significantly fewer cosplayers, but one of the most impressive ones that I saw, and the one that ultimately ended up winning first place in the costume contest, was this 9-foot-tall Hulkbuster Iron Man. That he had the whole thing down. Like, when he moved, it made sound effects and everything. Like, it was just badass. And he was just walking through the show floor on Thursday, and I heard it coming, and I turned around. I was like, holy shit, because I was, like, right at nutsack level looking at it, right? And I was like, oh, my God, this thing is huge. And I was already complaining, like, oh, my God, this is crowded, just trying to walk through. How is this guy getting through? By sheer force of will and brutality, let me tell you. He could just plow his way through. But, man, it was an impressive costume. So, yeah. That was the majority of my New York Comic Con experience. Feel free to, if you guys have any other questions to drill me with.
Did you buy anything?
Oh, shit, I did.
What'd you buy?
First thing I did, I ran over to the Super 7 booth, and I bought the Nostromo 3-pack for Aliens, for Alien, rather, the first movie. And it is... three of the Nostromo crew in spacesuits that have not been previously released. It's basically the different colored spacesuits that you saw the figures wearing, the characters wearing, on the box for the Egg Chamber playset. That was a Comic-Con exclusive from last year, from 2014.
Wait, is that like the pink, the yellow, and the blue?
Yeah. Yeah, and they have it the way they have it boxed up is like the old special edition Star Wars 3-pack.
Mm-hmm.
Figures that were released back in the late 70s, which are insanely stupid rare and expensive. They sell for like $3,000 to $5,000 a pop, easily, if not more. And they totally I don't want to say stole, but were inspired by the packaging design for that, which is perfect because, I mean, they wanted to go for that whole retro look anyway. It was just a really neat set, and it was only $45. And even though it meant I had to shove it in my suitcase to get home, I couldn't pass it up. And then I should have known better. So I am on the plane today, and I'm checking my email, and I get an email from Super 7 saying, hey, all of our New York Comic Con exclusives are for sale online in our online store. I'm all, you motherfucker. I didn't have to make room. I didn't have to throw away old pairs of socks and underwear to make room in my suitcase for this toy. I could have just bought it online. But, oh, well. I got a souvenir.
There you go.
Yeah. I went to a bunch of museums while I was out there, too, which was my big thing, what I wanted to do.
Museums. What a nerd.
Yeah.
That shit's so old.
That's the point. And I don't know if I'm going to get back out to New York anytime soon again, so I wanted to see as much as I could. I didn't do a lot of the touristy stuff. I didn't go see the World Trade Center.
You didn't go to Statue of Liberty?
I didn't go to Statue of Liberty. We flew over it, so I saw it. But I didn't go see... I didn't, like, go take a ferry out to it or anything.
Did you have the world's best pizza or anything like that?
Yes. Yeah. We ate at a couple pizza places and a couple Italian restaurants. You know, had to get a hot dog from a hot dog vendor in Central Park. You know, there's certain things you got to do, you know, from a food standpoint.
Sure.
And we tried to nail all of those just for fun. But I think this is the only... This is really legitimately the only vacation I've ever gone on where I've actually lost weight, because we fucking walked like 10 miles every day. No exaggeration. It was so goddamn much walking all throughout the city.
Hmm.
So
that's a shame.
Yeah, it was good times, though.
Glad to hear.
It sounds like a lot of fun. there was actual news at Comic-Con, too. It sounds like you missed all that fun stuff.
You know...
There was a convention going on.
I didn't concern myself with all that shit that required waiting in line and whatnot. I figured I'd read about it online.
Isn't that crazy how you have better coverage staying at home than you do actually being there?
Yeah, because you can't be everywhere at once. I mean, if you just do a quick Google search or just even watch your feed on Facebook or something like that, people are constantly all day long putting stuff up there. And I honestly feel like I end up learning more that way than I do from being there. Mm. And it's honestly, though, it's the same way as it is when we go to San Diego, because we have so many different press rooms we have to be in, or little junkets we have to go to, round tables here, there, that kind of thing. You aren't in Hall H for the big announcements. We hear about it third party.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the event and we hear about it third party because we're busy interviewing so-and-so about something else completely different, you know. We're hanging out talking about Adult Swim when, you know, Marvel's dropping big news or something like that. So it's just the same as it is San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Cool.
Except
one of the things they talked about at New York Comic Con was the possibility of an R-rated version of Batman the Killing Joke. We've talked about it a couple times in the podcast that it's pretty graphic. It's a pretty graphic novel, and
graphic novel.
It definitely lends itself to being rated R. I remember Justin and I had a debate about whether it could even be done, just because it is so graphic, and. They had a panel for it, and someone from DC, I guess, had mentioned that they were willing to make it R-rated, and he's kind of since retracted what he said. But you know, a room full of people heard it, so you know, who knows? So it might be in the realm of possibility. Randy, you haven't read The Killing Joke, or do you have any idea what The Killing Joke's about or anything?
I do know what it's about. I know the crux of it, but I've not read it. And I would personally be all aboard for R-rated animated version of it. Why not?
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. And they also announced that Mark Hamill was going to return as the Joker for it. I don't think
he said that would be the only thing that would bring him out of retirement.
Yeah, so he's going to come out and he's going to be the Joker for The Killing Joke. So so two yays on that one. So, you know, what say you, Justin?
Do they announce a director yet?
They have not yet, no.
Okay. I hope that Jay Olivia directs it, because he's pretty good at those DC properties.
Yeah, DC's doing pretty good with their little animated films. Mm-hmm. Well, most of the good ones have Batman in it already, so why break up the team?
Yeah, I like Flashpoint Paradox the best. That's my favorite.
Yeah, that one's good. That one is good.
Mm-hmm.
And how? And speaking of and hows, our good buddy George R. R. Martin has so much free time on his hands that he's actually developing one of his other properties for Cinemax.
Yeah.
He has a werewolf-centric show called Skin Trade. Sounds like a Cinemax movie already.
Yeah, I was reading that this morning.
I like it.
Yeah, it has something to do with vampire or werewolves, I guess. And so he decided that no one wants to read the conclusion of his Game of Thrones books, I guess. So he's going to spend a bunch of time trying to adapt it for the screen. So sorry, people waiting for books that will never be written.
Oh, man, that's funny. That is hilarious, dude. Because that's a whole year project at least.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he says he always envisioned it as a television show, but, you know, I'm sure he's going to want to write the pilot. I'm sure he's going to want to be heavily involved, especially in the pilot stage, because it's that really sets the tone for the rest of the show. And so, yeah, you're probably right. He's probably going to be invested in this for a year. And so that wipes out the bulk of 2016 for him to finish book six.
Yep.
Plus, then it's got to be edited and published. I mean, we're looking like 2017 now. Game of Thrones will be done on HBO before book six comes out.
And that is so funny to me. That is hilarious. Because book five came out on the heels of season one starting, basically, is how that worked out. It was all kind of that same summer.
Yeah, he writes books to bookend the series.
Yeah. Holy shit, man. That's intense.
Yeah, and imagine if this takes off. If it takes off, he's going to have to be even more involved, and it'll even take longer. Maybe he'll just say, you know what? Game of Thrones, the HBO's got it. I'm not even going to waste my time.
Right.
How funny would that be? He just, like, throws in the towel. He's like, well, they really did a better job.
Yeah.
No Dorne. And also New York Comic Con, they announced that Tarantino did an interview with Variety where he announced that the 70mm version of The Hateful Eight will actually be a different cut of the film. It'll be slightly different and it'll be longer. He says that there's certain scenes that work better in the wide format that don't really work in the standard like Cineplex version, as he's calling it, or Multiplex version, as he's calling it. So, I mean, it works out great for people who live in major cities like, you know, we do. But, I mean, someone who lives in, you know, middle of nowhere, you know, they're not going to be able to find a theater that's going to project in 70mm. So, sucks to be you if you're a Tarantino fan in Iowa.
So, I got to go to IMAX to see this?
You have to go to, I mean...
Or a 70mm.
IMAX theaters, I'm sure, will show it. But it's a different process. But... I'm sure all the IMAX theaters will show it.
So is it wide or tall? What are we talking about when it's, isn't it wider?
It's big.
It's
like eight stories tall.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, I don't even, because IMAX is because this comes out on Christmas on the 25th, and all the IMAX theaters are still going to be showing Star Wars. Star Wars has IMAX locked up for 4 weeks.
Oh man.
So we're not going to see, you won't see The Hateful Eight in IMAX until like mid January.
Jeez, oh.
So I don't know what the plan is, because it comes out on Christmas and then it comes out wide on January 8th, and so it would still have like 1 week before it could go IMAX. Maybe that's their thing. We'll get all the people on Christmas, then we'll get them again on January 8th, and then we'll get them when it goes for IMAX.
So what about when the video ultimately gets released, like on Blu-ray sales and stuff? Is there going to be, will they have some kind of special cut for it too? Or
I would think so. Tarantino hates DVDs and Blu-ray. Like, he's like just, he's like the most anti-digital person ever. Like, he's been very vocal that I don't know why anyone watch videos on DVD or Blu-ray, or and he absolutely abhors streaming. Like, he thinks like Netflix and like any kind of streaming service is like the Antichrist. Like, he's kind of becoming this curmudgeon old man now who's like, I don't want none of this new technology.
So he wants like film prints sent to in stock sent to his house so he could just hook up a projector and watch it in his home.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and that's that's what he wants us to do.
go to the store and buy four cans of a movie.
Uh huh. and then find somewhere to project his 70mm print, because it won't cost $1 trillion to do that. But
what a character.
Yeah, I think he's kind of becoming out of touch with his audience. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that doesn't translate to a cinematic vision, because he's always had a pretty good eye and stuff. But from a social standpoint, he seems to be kind of missing the trends here.
Right. That's interesting.
So, yeah. So, I guess if you can, see the 70mm version, and hopefully it's better.
Kurt Russell's in it, so it should be amazing.
Yes, he is. He looks funny in it, too. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
It'll be good. Did you guys check out that Daredevil Season 2 trailer where you got your glimpse of Elektra and Punisher?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you didn't miss much. It was like 2 seconds.
And Shane is Punisher, right?
Yeah, Shane is Punisher.
Apparently it had people frothing at the mouth at New York, though.
Ooh.
The bulk of the trailer is like all like footage from like the first season. Yeah, you know, kind of like a recap almost thing, like
sure.
Showing like why he's Daredevil now. And then the second like the third like third is got the new stuff.
Interesting. Who's playing Elektra?
Nobody.
Do we know?
No. I mean, we know who plays her, but it's no one that we've ever heard of.
Oh.
It's Elodie Young. Y-U-N-G.
Uh-huh.
What's that, like two U's, three O's?
Elodie?
E-L-O-D-I-E. She was in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. She was Jinx in a G.I. Joe Retaliation.
There you go. I know who she is now.
No, you don't.
I do. I'm looking right at her.
Oh, do you? Okay. Yeah. I'm like, I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, Jinx. She was the one that was training with Snake Eyes in the mountains.
Oh, yeah, with the red outfit or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess I know who she is. She is going to be Elektra.
I could buy that.
She'd probably wear the same outfit she wore in G.I. Joe Retaliation.
She's ninja. She knows how to do that shit.
Yeah, she can just wear that red number again.
Yeah.
Red numbers.
What is Elektra? She doesn't have any powers, right? She's just a martial artist. That's it.
She uses size, like the weapon size,
like Raphael. Like,
yeah, not her bulk.
Does she have? That would be sweet if she wore the same kind of eye socketed bandana like Raphael.
Yeah,
she doesn't do that.
And then she was like dressed like a turtle.
If I were Daredevil, I'd cut out the eye sockets on my mask. Just to have the creepy blind eyes showing everybody.
It's like, oh, he's blind.
Not taking anything away from blind people. I love your eyes. They're all beautiful.
But you can't fight crime, probably.
Yes.
If you're a blind guy, I can fight crime. Mad props.
Daredevil's fake.
Hey, admittedly so. You know what else is fake? The Hulk.
No.
Yeah,
I ripped my shirt off once when I was really angry.
Well, we got Captain America: Civil War coming out middle of next year, and it's gonna it's gonna basically have everyone from the Marvel Cinematic Universe except for Thor and the Hulk.
What?
And so the word around the campfire is that the Hulk may join Thor in Thor Ragnarok, the third Thor movie that comes out next year, and I guess there's going to be extended scenes that take place neither on Earth nor on Asgard. So a lot of people are rumoring that this will be their Planet Hulk storyline type stuff. I'm sure they're not going to go the whole route, but they can have elements of Planet Hulk that would kind of excite people.
So how does Hulk get into space? He just does like a catch a ride, like Borderlands style? Or does Thor pick him up and say, hey, I got this sweet adventure that I want you to go on with me?
Yeah, I need you and your brainy friend. who knows? Maybe he just takes that little jet that he stole and
out into space. I don't think it works that way, does it?
I don't know. He can do it.
He just throws the ship really far and then jumps in it. He does his little bounce move and jumps back into the cockpit after he throws it into space.
Yeah, well, you saw The Martian. You don't need a lot of mass. Just once you start going in one direction, you're going to keep going. So, you know, it's a slow boat to China or Mars or wherever Planet Hulk is going.
But in the comic, the Illuminati, like, sent him into space, right? Like, they were like, well, he's too dangerous on Earth, so let's tell him he won a trip, and we'll put him in this sweet rocket.
All expense paid.
And wash our hands, right? That's kind of how it went down. That's how I remember it. All the big wigs of superheroes were sitting at a table and said, we got to get rid of this fucking Banner. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, we're tired of cleaning up his mess. He's got to go.
That's a shame.
Yeah. There's like Professor X and Reed Richards and Namor and Iron Man and Black Panther. And they're
an ocean guy too?
Yeah, Namor.
That's his name?
His name's Namor.
Who's the Submariner? Is that DC?
That's Namor. He's Namor Submariner.
Oops.
He's a less cool version of Aquaman. He's like a more moody version of Aquaman.
Right. You know, it's funny because we just had a conversation last month about people not knowing which heroes belong to which properties. Like your average run-of-the-mill movie or comic book movie goer.
Yeah, I got no clue.
And I'm like, I don't know this guy. Submarine captain, for all I know.
Yeah. Well, I bet a lot of people don't even realize that, like, X-Men are Marvel just because, you know, they have their own movies and they don't appear in, like, the Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. Like, I bet some people don't even think they're involved.
Speaking of which, did you see that Bryan Cranston said that he wants to play Sinister?
Yeah.
I thought you'd get awesome. A kick out of that.
Oh, man, I would love that. I mean, A, because I love Cranston, and B, because Mr. Sinister is awesome.
He's a piece of shit, man, that Sinister.
He's a bit of a douche, that one.
He's like the Starscream of X-Men. Like, he's always kind of plotting his own little ways of winning against Megatron, whereas Apocalypse would be Megatron. Do you see that at all? Like, Sinister is just always kind of undermining Apocalypse would want.
Absolutely. He's totally like he's ready to take over.
Yeah. He's just the Starscream of the X-Men universe. It's nuts.
He 100%. That is a perfect analogy. Like, I could see it happening.
Piece of shit.
Whoa. That's a little.
I used to love those X-Men Legends games that were like on Xbox. The original Xbox. Yeah, they were.
Yeah, the little dungeon crawlers.
Yeah, those are fun. Check that shit out.
Hell yeah.
Anywho, what else is going on?
I mean, that's really it for the big news as far as what's coming out of New York Comic Con. You know, they showed some real long sizzle reel trailers for all the DC shows, for Flash, for Arrow, and for Gotham. Mm-hmm. Like, the Gotham one's like 6 minutes, and they're all pretty good watches.
Did Force Awakens have a presence at all, or no?
Not really. I mean, we didn't see anything new from the movie, and Hasbro didn't even have a booth set up on the floor to show any kind of new toys, but they did have a private party Wednesday, the night before the convention officially began, in which they revealed a bunch of the next wave of 6-inch Black Series action figures, one of which being an old Han Solo figure, which the sculpt, let me tell you, looks spot on. It looks exactly like you would expect. Actually, it looked dead on to Harrison Ford. It looked perfect. So that was really the only thing that was kind of new or surprising. Nothing new about the movie, no new footage, anything like that, and no booth from Lucasfilm or anything like that. You know, in San Diego, there's a giant Star Wars section that is many booths together, different vendors, that kind of thing. Nada here.
Man, that's too bad. Dave, you posted something about the runtime possibly being leaked?
Yeah, they were. I mean, obviously the film isn't completely edited yet, but you know, they get a pretty good idea of what they're shooting for. And back at D23, Abrams had kind of let slip that he was thinking it was going to be like around 124 minutes. Recently, leaks have come out that it may actually end up being 133 minutes. Or sorry, take that back, 136 minutes. Which would put it right around the Phantom Menace, which is 133 minutes. So it would make it the longest Star Wars film. And you know, I'm not really concerned about it being that long, because you know, we do give Abrams, well, I give Abrams a lot of shit a lot of times. But he does a couple things right, and pacing is one of them. You know, you say what you will about, you know, Into Darkness
being the greatest movie ever made,
Or Cloverfield, you know, they're at least really well paced. Like, you never feel bored, and you never feel like the bloat. And so whoever he edits with, you know, they do a real great job of keeping the story progressing. And if I have any complaints about the Star Wars as a whole, it's they linger too long on places like Tatooine. Like, anytime Tatooine is on screen, they are on Tatooine too long. Mm-hmm. A New Hope, Return of the Jedi, Phantom Menace, freaking Attack of the Clones. Anytime they're ever on Tatooine, they're on Tatooine at least 5 minutes too long.
I'll agree with you there, and I hope they don't repeat the same mistake with Jakku.
Exactly.
It feels like Tatooine to me.
Yeah, so the second I saw they were going to a desert planet, I instantly got scared, because they're always there too long. Like, I mean, they're on Hoth just as long as they're on Tatooine, but you don't feel it. Like, Hoth is amazing. I don't know if it's just
because of the battle.
Yeah, exactly. So, have shit happen on Tatooine, or just leave. GTFO. Action or GTFO.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much just wasted time on Tatooine in every movie.
It's funny you mention that, because they're both desolate planets, right? But, and with Hoth, it's just nothing but snow, but you're in that sweet base that they had to build, and they're scared, they're on the run, and it's exciting. Everything about Hoth is exciting.
You open the movie with a climactic battle you would expect to see at the end of a movie, you know? And that, I mean, it's just like a James Bond movie, how it starts off in the middle of an adventure. I freaking love that. And it's one of the reasons why Empire Strikes Back is almost everybody's favorite.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, even Endor, I mean...
I like Endor.
Endor may drag a tiny bit, but not nearly Tatooine. I mean, Endor, they're going all over that planet, and they got, like, character stories just sprung about that entire moon, and it's still thrilling. There's still a lot of cool shit happening there. It just seems to be Tatooine is, like, the planet where storylines go to die.
Oh, man, I remember, speaking of Endor, when the first time they hopped on those speeder bikes flying through the forest, my mouth was open the entire time. It was jaw-dropping. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I'm like, how are they even making this? This is so fucking cool. And then when he got knocked off and he whips out his lightsaber and you see his sweet lightsaber twirling action throughout the forest, I thought that was so badass too. Oh my God, everything about that is so cool.
Where can I get one of these speeder bikes?
Yeah. I was like, how did they not die? They're going so fast.
Oh man, when he throws the one guy off and he hits the tree, that's fucking awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, I was captivated by that when I was a kid. I was just the right age. It was the first Star Wars movie I saw on the biggest screen, and I fell in love.
Yeah, that's good. Good shit.
Yeah, so get the F off Tatooine. Mm-hmm. Or Jakku.
Speaking of Star Wars, you guys see a lot of the Battlefront footage from the beta over the weekend?
I played it, son!
Did you?
Yeah.
I am so goddamn jealous.
That's okay.
Looks so good.
Well, it's so funny. A lot of people are griping about it, but like their gripes are like the things that were in the first two Battlefronts. Yeah. So it's like a lot of their complaints is like they didn't play the first Battlefronts.
Right. So it's definitely fun, but and the sound is amazing. You know, I'm a big sucker for any sound that comes from Star Wars. It's just it takes me back to the movies and the heartbeat. Right, sounds really fun. We got to remember that it is a beta, so it's very limited. There's only two maps that you play on. And that's all there is to it. But the backgrounds and the graphics look pretty fun. There's all these crashed spaceships and debris everywhere. And it's a lot to take in. There's definitely some balancing issues, which kind of suck. But they'll figure all that out. Ain't no thing. But flying in a TIE fighter and a fucking X-Wing and running around on Hoth and driving an AT-AT is pretty freaking sweet, dude. Not gonna lie. They actually just announced a $50 season pass, which is going to rub people the wrong way because DLC always does. But what can you do? Especially if you're paying, you know, $60 for a game, then another $50 for the DLC, $110 later, you got your complete game.
Yeah, I can see that being a little bit of a rub.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you look at it as like, hey, I'm getting two separate games.
Yeah, which is, honestly, that's how you have to look at it these days.
Well, yeah, to not constantly be pulling your hair out, I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, one other piece of Star Wars news. It was revealed that J.J. Abrams has final cut control over The Force Awakens, which means the studio, the producers, the execs, the suits, the man,
mm-hmm.
Does not have final say on either the length or the content, but it is actually in the hands of director J.J. Abrams, which is, I think, a huge win in terms of being able to creatively tell the story that he wants to tell. And I also think that just shows how much trust that they put in him.
Right. Especially he was apprehensive at first that when they were telling the story. He's like, well, I'm kind of doing the Star Trek thing. I don't want to. Yeah. I'd rather just watch it as a fan as opposed to being involved in it. So maybe that was the part of the final bits of the deal that finally got him to sway over to direct.
Yeah, he turned it down 3 times.
Yeah.
He assures us that it will not be Disney-fied.
Ooh.
The exact word.
What does that mean?
Like, no, like, princes and singing and stuff like that?
Yeah, there's a Princess Leia. Is that right?
I would have been more happy if he said it wouldn't have been Marvelized.
Mm.
I don't want the Star Wars Cinematic Universe to have the same pitfalls as the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I want those standalone movies to be strikingly different.
All right, so here's a question for you. Will Force Awakens cross the $1 billion mark in theaters, and B, how long will it take?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, and how long will it take? I say it will do it faster. I think Jurassic World did it in 11 days.
say a week for Star Wars, a solid 7 days.
That would be awesome.
I plan to give them a lot of my money.
Yeah, that's another thing. Repeats. I have a feeling that Star Wars is going to have more repeat audiences than Jurassic World.
Yeah, I really, really fair. Thoroughly enjoyed Jurassic World, but I only saw it once in the theaters.
Yeah.
Star Wars, I mean, even a shitty Star Wars movie, I saw Episode 2 in the theater like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I saw Episode 1 twice, Episode 2 once, and then Episode 3 times.
Yeah, Episode 3 I saw a lot in the theater. I really liked that one.
Sorry, it took 13 days for Jurassic World to hit a billion. I would say that Episode 7 will do it in 12 days.
Ooh.
Do we want to get a competition going? Can we get an
over-under? $1, Bob!
We'll put the over-under at 13 because that's Jurassic Park. Do you think faster or slower than we can do, or Jurassic World? So why don't we do it that way? Faster or slower than Jurassic World?
Why don't you do it, since you think it'll do it in 12, why don't you just say, why don't we do 12 or less?
Alright, I say 12, so what do you guys think?
I think it'll be less, yeah.
Yeah, my magic number is going to be 10. I think I'm going to stick to 10.
The only difference, though, is that Jurassic World was summertime, and this is going to be Christmas.
But keep in mind that it's almost running on a... Like, Jurassic World came out in the summertime, where there's a lot of movies, to where, I mean, at this point, where Hunger Games will be a couple weeks old, Spectre will be a couple weeks old, it'll own the box office.
Right, that's true.
Now, when are we going to count day one? Because I know there's
the 18th
advance.
When it comes out. U.S. Well, I guess technically it comes out the day before in France and England.
Yeah, France is like the 16th, England is 17th, and we have some sort of premiere on the 14th here at Chinese Theater.
It doesn't count. The 18th counts because it doesn't open in any real major market before the 18th. It doesn't open in China, Japan, Australia, or any of like the big territories before the 18th. UK is a... Okay. It's a small country, and so is France. So I would say we start the 18th, and so 10 days from the 18th is, you know, the 28th. Sorry, the 27th would be its 10th day, which works out good because that's a Sunday. So that'll be the end of the next weekend.
Sunday.
Perfect.
So that's 10 days.
Cool.
Yeah. Make it so.
It is written in the record.
Randy, do you want to plow through your top 10 list really quick?
I do. So I was looking for something New York Comic Con related, but I ended up finding something Back to the Future related instead, which reminds me that they had a thing going on at New York Comic Con. If you came dressed as Marty McFly and you went to a certain booth, you got this replica bottle of Pepsi Perfect from Back to the Future 2. And there's only going to be something like 10,000 of them made. And one of the ways that you could get it without having to probably pay a stupid price for it online was at New York Comic Con. I saw a lot of Marty McFly's walking around, no shit, but I did not see a single bottle of that Pepsi Perfect, and I never found the booth they were giving it away at. But I know that was a thing. So anyway, to commemorate that thing, here are 10 things you may not know about Back to the Future. But some of them you probably will, because you guys are geeks like me. All right, number 10. Huey Lewis made his acting debut in Back to the Future 1. Do you guys know what character he played?
I don't remember his name, but I know he was the guy with the little bullhorn that says they're just too darn loud.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, on some sort of council at the high school.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, you guys are just too darn loud. Number 9, Ronald Reagan doesn't need roads. In a presidential speech he gave after Back to the Future came out, he actually quoted the movie. We're going, we don't need roads.
Idiot.
Number eight. Einstein wasn't always a dog. He was intended to be another animal. You guys want to take a guess what it might be?
An owl.
No. This isn't Hogwarts. No, it was originally supposed to be a chimpanzee.
Oh, but
the name was always going to be Einstein.
And then he was Copernicus in
Copernicus
the 50s.
Was his other dog. Yeah, yeah. Number 7. Movie studios were not interested at all. They went through 40 different studios before they finally ended up with Spielberg's Amblin Entertainment and Universal Studios coming together to put this movie together. Even Disney turned them down back in the day. It was just too high concept. At the time, no one wanted to take a chance on it.
Wow.
Number 6 had a really popular filming location. And this is actually kind of local to us here in Southern California. The high school that they shot at was Whittier Union High School.
Yeah.
And that was where they shot many scenes from Back to the Future 1 and 2, anything around the high school. And it's also been in several other famous movies, such as Masters of the Universe, Justin's favorite, Matilda, Father of the Bride 2, Terminator Salvation, and the Halloween-themed family film Hocus Pocus.
Nice. To go back to your Pepsi Perfect, they're making 6,500 bottles, and the first 1,500 were at New York Comic Con.
Oh, cool.
And they're supposed to be $20. $20.15, like 2015.
That's awesome. Yeah, I never saw any of them while I was there, but I was actively looking for them. Clearly, I wasn't looking that hard. Number five. The near name change of Back to the Future. So the head of Universal Studios at the time didn't think that Back to the Future was a name that was going to sell. He didn't think the audience was going to get it. So he sent a memo out to the entire production crew expressing his desire to change the name to Spaceman from Pluto, which is basically kind of similar to when Marty's in his radiation suit and he's trying to basically goad George McFly into actually making a move on Lorraine. Before they changed the dialogue to I'm Darth Vader from Planet Vulcan, it was I'm a spaceman from Pluto. That line was originally in the script. That's what he wanted the title to be. Spielberg kindly sent him a memo back saying that's not going to happen.
Hmm.
Funny joke.
Oh, go ahead.
No, that's it. He's a funny joke. Haha, not going to happen.
All right. one thing that always... That seems kind of weird, especially now that I'm an adult. Biff was practically raping Lorraine in the car, like about to.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to 1985, and he's allowed on their property to wax their car. I would think that she would want nothing to do with this man that tried to
physically assault. The 80s were real big on apologizing for rape. I mean, just look at, like, Revenge of the Nerds.
Right.
I mean, he rapes her in that amusement park, and then they get married. And, like, she's like... It's not rape because he was good at it, I guess.
That's offensive.
It's terrible.
What are you looking at? This ain't no peep show.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, terrible. Terrible. God, that scene makes me so uncomfortable.
I mean, coming from Spielberg... Well, I guess it was Zemeckis, right? But as Amblin Entertainment.
Yeah, Zemeckis directed it, and Spielberg was one of the producers or executive producers.
As someone who is trying to teach us of a world that has trying to evolve from this hate and intolerance, I think that's interesting that a rape scene and then ultimately some form of mild forgiveness is okay in his movie. This seems kind of weird. Maybe I'm looking into it too much. But...
Well, yeah, I mean.
Right? What do you say to that?
I know. Well, the way I'm trying to justify it is in the version of 1985 where he's waxing their car, yes, he did, I guess, attempt to rape her and he got laid out. But in the previous version of 1985, he wasn't waxing cars. He was the one returning the beat-up car. He was still a prick. Say hi to your mom for me. Mm-hmm. That guy. But that begs the question, did he try to rape her in that version of 1955 without Marty McFly back there orchestrating that whole thing?
I don't think so. I think it's Marty's fault that his mom almost got raped.
I think you're right. And that's why I stopped George myself
takes
from saying
her to the, yeah, George takes her to the dance in the original timeline. It's only the only reason he has to like fight for her honor is because Marty takes her.
Yeah. And screws things up, yeah.
Yeah, almost literally.
He cocked it right up. All right. Number four.
My brother.
Friction on the set. Now, you guys have probably heard about the differences between Crispin Glover and the rest of the cast. They didn't necessarily see eye to eye, and more specifically between Crispin Glover and director Robert Zemeckis. Now, Glover wanted Zemeckis to change the script. He said that the ending, the outcome of the movie, was too centric on financial gain. Like, they were going to use the time machine for financial gain, or that his character, George McFly, his big turnaround in the movie was he became a successful author and had financial gain out of it. He said it's sending the wrong message to audiences, and he wanted Zemeckis to change the script. Zemeckis pretty much told him to go fuck himself. And because of that, he was not allowed back in to be in part two or part three. They recast George McFly. And there was a whole legal battle because Crispin Glover wanted money for his image that was used in part two, and
anyone
was ever seen in part three. Yeah, and well, as well he probably should have, because they did use footage of him from the first movie.
Yeah,
probably without his consent. So I mean, what can you do? But yeah, it was an uncomfortable situation to be a part of, and it's kind of unfortunate to think that that happened that way, because I'd be really curious to see if they didn't have to write George McFly out of part two and part three, where they would have taken his character. Now, this one's interesting. Part three, the movie will be preserved for all time. Now, you've probably heard of the Library of Congress, where some of the most important books are sent to be preserved for pretty much eternity, right? We've all seen it in National Treasure 2. Was that the one that had Book of Secrets?
I think? It was, yes.
Right on. Good memory. Nick Cage, all the way. All right. So, did you know that they actually preserve movies as well?
I did.
75 movies get chosen every year, I think, to be honored and preserved for the duration. And in 2007, Back to the Future was one of those movies.
What about Nonstop to Comic-Con?
Not yet, sir.
Our application is pending.
Yeah, we're working on it.
It's a lot of paperwork.
Well, it doesn't take up any shelf space. It's digital, so who cares?
Exactly. It's in a cloud somewhere, right? Yeah.
Do you know the cloud?
Number two, Marty McFly was replaced. We actually all know this. Eric Stoltz was the original Marty McFly, and it just didn't have the right comic timing to really pull it off the way Zemeckis wanted it. And number one, this is another one you guys may have heard of before, but it's still pretty damn interesting. Originally, the Time Machine was not going to be made out of a DeLorean. It wasn't going to be a car at all. It was originally going to be a refrigerator. And they ended up killing the idea pretty early on in the screenwriting process, like within the second or third draft of the script, because they didn't want kids mimicking what they see on screen, climbing into a refrigerator and then suffocating themselves to death.
Wow.
So in a way, if it was still nuclear powered, they would have been the first to nuke the fridge.
Shut your mouth.
I'm sorry. That was terrible. But anyway, that's my list for this week.
It's a good list.
But also with Eric Stoltz being recast, they had to get a new Jennifer too, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, it was the third Jennifer.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Because they cast one, and she wasn't working with Eric Stoltz because she was too short, and so then they got a taller Jennifer, and then she was too tall for Michael J. Fox.
Melora Hardin, right? It was a girl from The Office.
Yeah, and then they got a third girl.
Yeah, that's a lot. Eric Stoltz ruined everything.
He did. He wanted it to be serious.
That sounds like a great book title. Eric Stoltz ruined everything.
It's probably the name of his book.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and then he puts an unauthorized stamp on it.
But written by him. Eric Stoltz's unauthorized biography.
It's like Otto, and then it's scratched out. It turns into biography. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, an unauthorized autobiography would be just like so stupid. It's like, wait, how can that even be?
Because it's like a sex tape. You record it in your house, someone breaks in, steals it, and then
you deny it.
It was leaked.
And meanwhile, yeah, you see yourself hitting record on the camera. You see yourself looking into it, giving the thumbs up, then going and doing your thing.
Yep.
I swear I didn't know a camera was running.
Yeah. And then you leave the tape out on the table for the whole world to see it.
Yep.
Because I still picture sex tapes are physical tapes.
Well, yeah, like VHS, right? Like a big old fat cassette tape.
Yes, there's no such thing as just a digital sex tape. It's all about having a flat-out VHS copy.
I've got like a wall of VHS tapes. It's just got dates and names written on it.
Oh, you are terrible.
It's like walking into a mom-and-pop video store circa like 1989.
It's got the beaded carpet and curtain and everything.
I like it.
And it smells kind of weird back there, but you go anyway because you're curious.
You're like, hey, what's back here?
Ooh, la, la.
I once went to one of those like video liquidators. Have you ever seen like the billboards for like those Video Liquidators? They're like, oh, we got movies from like G to X. And so like I finally got curious and went into one of them one day. There was like this like closet and it had like 100 movies in it. And I'm like, well, this isn't very impressive. And then I saw some guy come out of this like non-labeled door. And I'm like, oh, what's back there? Open up. It's like this cavernous like Raiders of the Lost Ark style warehouse with nothing but categorized porn.
That's awesome.
And then the hundred movies in like the closet are all clean ones, right?
Yeah, exactly. Those ones were like Bambi, all the G movies.
Yeah.
And then it's like just catacombs of just pornography, like every like label you can imagine. I was like, oh, I should probably go.
Yeah. Wrap up 6 of those crates and put them in my truck.
Yeah. Don't worry about sorting them. I'll take whatever. I'm not picky. Sometimes the mood strikes. You know what I mean?
It's like a fun bag.
Yeah.
It's like a loot crate.
Yeah. It's like a porn loot crate.
It's a spooge crate.
Ooh.
I wonder if they have those. Not a spooge crate, but a porn crate.
I imagine they have to have some kind of like adult themed loot crate.
Oh man, let's get on that.
Yeah. You get like a random different video every month and some different kind of like
a toy.
Flavored or scented lube and a toy.
Yeah.
Something called the fantasy box.
I was just Googling. I typed in porn crate.
I typed in adult loot crate.
Oh my god. Porn grandpa's old crate of porn just came up.
Wow.
Oh god.
We need to create this porn crate. That's $1 billion. It's probably $1 billion idea.
Yeah. Damn it.
I think somebody already beat us to it from the sound of it.
Yeah. There's no porn crate.
Mm-hmm.
Porncrate.com. Let's see. It's probably. Oh.
And I want it to actually send in a wooden crate with like holes drilled in it. Like a GIMP or something could be in this little crate.
Yeah.
Something alive is in there.
It works as a glory hole too. Like you stand it up.
Yes.
In my house, everything works as a glory hole.
There you go. Perfect. On that note, why don't you take us out?
Well, you guys know anyone got anything they want to say before I take us out? Pistol
Hey, anybody? Anybody in the Laughlin, Nevada area this weekend should come check out Nonstop to Comic Con. We are playing in the Laughlin International Film Festival. This coming weekend, we're going to be screening on Friday at 3:15 p.m. and then Saturday at 9:30 p.m. Just go to the Laughlin International Film Festival website or go to randomreel.com to check out all of our screenings and upcoming screenings, times, locations, all that fun stuff. Come check us out. It's going to be a good time. And it's playing in an actual honest-to-God movie theater. So that's going to be a really neat experience for everybody involved.
Does it have nickel slots or a kino room in the movie theater?
No, and it doesn't have, like, one of those little curtains that raises up where you have to, like, wipe up after you're done.
You get paid by quarter.
Yeah.
Cool.
Like a peep show. Well, cool.
Yeah.
Make it happen. But, yeah, and while you have that long drive to Laughlin, you can listen to the other podcasts in our Geek Legacy Network. You got the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Steven, where they talk about video games. They're going to talk more about their beta for Battlefront, I'm sure. They'll probably yell at each other and call each other names, and it makes for a wonderful hour of programming in my eyes. And then you got the Comic Corner Podcast with Jeff and Tyler, where they talk about comics. I'm sure they'll have a big to-do because New York Comic Con was just this weekend, so make sure you check out their next episode. You know, as always, go to geeklegacy.com for your geek news and reviews. Follow us on Twitter @GeekLegacy, then we'd love to chat with you. All right, have a good day.